Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I'm really excited to welcome back to the program my friend Kamanzi Constable. He was actually scheduled to come on last month, and we had technical problems all over the place. So he has very patiently and very graciously offered to come back midweek, and I'm so glad to have him here. Kamanzi is a very, very interesting guy. He is an author who self-published 2 e-books that sold over 80,000 copies. That's just not done, I have to tell you. That's hard to do. And his published book just hit the bookstores. I'm seeing pictures of it all over Barnes & Noble. And if you go on Facebook, you see he's all over the place with this book, which is really exciting. Kamanzi is a life coach who helps people figure out what their dreams are and how to make those dreams a reality. He's also a consultant who works with companies worldwide on how to effectively connect with people through social media, as well as an international speaker who teaches audiences all over the world how to stop existing and how to truly live. We're going to talk about some of those trips, too. He has been in some of the darndest places. Kamanzi's mission is to help people live the full and abundant life they truly deserve to live and should live. Kamanzi, thank you so much for coming back. I really appreciate your intestinal fortitude, because we had some hard times last time. So I'm glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. You know, though, we're not going to let the technical difficulties hold us back.
No. I about had a meltdown. Like I was telling you in the green room just now, you know, if this happens again, it's a sign that it's time for me to hang up my microphone. And I really don't want to do that, so I'm so glad you made it.
No, so don't hang up the microphone.
Oh, I was close last week. Between my air conditioner going out, between technical difficulties, and then my computer failed, I was walking around thinking if I had nerve enough, I would just bang my head against the wall, but I'm afraid to give myself a headache. So I didn't. I thought, great, I just need a migraine on top of everything else that's going on. Last month was one of those, have you ever had these? And I have them so rarely, which is a thank goodness. I think that when all these things went wrong, I thought, wow. Because normally I just kind of skate through life because I make the assumption that everything's going to be just fine. Well, this last month that failed me. So it was an interesting month. So anyway,
sometimes it happens.
Yeah, it does. And it was a lesson to me to kind of settle back and relax a bit, which I actually did. I enjoyed it. You know, once I got over being hysterical, I actually enjoyed it. So before we get too immersed in all of my problems, why don't you cut me off at the pass and tell people about you, how you got to be where you are, what you're doing, and you know, just give them a little backstory, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, it started when I was 2 years old.
I can't go back that far. No, go. I love it.
So, you know, for 12 years, I was completely miserable. I was doing work that I really didn't want to do, and I wanted so much more for my life. I knew there was more out there. I just didn't know how to get it. And about 3 years ago,
What kind of work were you doing? Come on, see. I don't think I ever did know.
Oh, yeah, I was delivering bread for 12 years and at midnight. And it was my own business. It was a franchisee situation where you bought into a territory and they gave you a bulk number, but then you covered all your own expenses. So for all intents and purposes, you were a business owner. And so when I was 19 years old, I could run all day and all night long, and I was good to go, you know, because I'm 19 and I'm ready. But then as I got older and had a wife and kids, it got hard to wake up at midnight and only get 3 hours of sleep a night and then go do a physical job.
Yeah.
So
now, Kimanzi, I have to back up to the 19 years old. That's pretty unusual to have. Weren't you possibly one of the youngest franchise owners?
I could have been. You know, I was already in the bread world. I had worked for Sara Lee, delivering bread for the company. And as I was delivering every day, I would see these guys that delivered this other bread. And I was always curious about how they did that because they never had uniforms and they said they worked for themselves. So I'm like, well, how can I do that? And so, yeah, just talking to the guy every day, he kind of gave me the 411. And I went and I was able at 19 to secure a loan to actually buy into this business. And I thought, man, this sounds pretty good. And it was good for 12 years. It was great income.
Oh, I can imagine. I'm just fascinated by the 19 years old. I mean, that in and of itself seems to be, you were a self-starter even at that age, which I think has a lot to do with your current story. So keep on going. I just needed to kind of clarify that in my mind that you were 19 when you did this. That's pretty astonishing
to
me.
I think it was, Denise, because my mom is from Kenya. She's from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So she came to this country from college, and ever since she has been here, and she's hit the ground running. You know, she got a degree. She was a nurse. But besides that, she started a couple daycares. She started a couple group homes. And she's always been a business owner. And so I guess I kind of saw what she was doing.
Right. So that work ethic you grew up with, so this wasn't something that you had to really struggle to even think about being an entrepreneur. It was kind of already in your mindset.
Absolutely. It was
okay.
There.
Yeah, I love that story. Okay, keep on going. I'm sorry, I needed to know what 19 was all about.
No, and, you know, 3 years ago was when there were some changes in the franchise, and the franchise owners were the ones kind of taking the brunt of it. And so it went beyond just being miserable with getting no sleep and always being cranky and this and that to am I even going to have this business in a few years? And how am I going to support my wife and 3 kids? So that's when I said, enough was enough. I have to do something about this. And it took a while, and it took going through different things that I thought, like, were my passion, or I thought I wanted to be. You and I have talked in the past about my experience as a wedding planner and how that was a complete bust, trying to plan my sister's wedding. But those experiences really help me figure out what it is that I want to do. And I thought my dream was to be a writer. So I took some things that I have been thinking about and writing about for a while in regards to work, and I self-published my first book, which was called Tales of the Everyday Working Man and Woman. And, you know, I promoted that thing as hard as I could promote it, or as hard as my knowledge base of promotions worked, and it still ended up flopping. It sold 5 copies in the first 3 months, and 3 of those were to friends of mine. So technically, I don't know who bought the other 2. Yeah, I don't even know about that. It could have been my mom, you know, for all I know. Could have been my wife.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Well,
it wasn't you, was it?
No. I didn't know about that book. I would have helped out, though. I really would have.
So that experience just really, it made me think about what I want to do. Do I want to be a writer? What do I want to do? And it was during that time that I got to help a young man figure out what he wanted to do and help him make his dream a reality. And that, just helping him out, it made me realize my overall dream. And that was to really just spread a message and help people realize that you don't have to settle in life. That you just got to stop making excuses and you can't live the life of your dreams. But more than that, life is just way too short to settle, you know.
Right.
And so that's more of my overall dream, is just to help people in any way I can. So if that involves writing, speaking, coaching, or creating content, whatever it is, that's my mission and that's my dream.
Come on, Zeke, do me a favor, if you don't mind, if this is not something you want to touch on, tell me. But if you would, walk us through kind of the time frame to where you said, I can't do this anymore. It's not my life's work. Yeah, I'm making some money, but it's killing me. I can't spend time with my family. Can you kind of walk us back a little bit into that timeline where you said, I'm done. I'm selling my franchise or giving it away or whatever it was that you did. And just kind of tell us how how that timeline worked out. I mean, was there a period where you just, you had no income coming in? This is the story that people want to hear. They want to know how you took that first entrepreneurial leap, because that's scary for a lot of people.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Leave that paycheck to go, oh, crud, now what? So do you mind sharing? I started to say something else. But,
yeah,
but anyway,
absolutely.
Yeah,
so
can you share that story?
Ago,
do you mind?
3 years ago was when I decided enough was enough, and it actually took me a year. So this took us up to 2 years ago to do something about it and self-publish a book. My first self-published book came out in August of 2011. And I didn't see any sales of that through the rest of the year. I thought about it at that point, like, should I take the leap? Should I just quit? And then reality hit me. I was living, I wouldn't even say paycheck to paycheck. If there's something less than that, like paycheck, between paycheck, that's what I was living. I was writing all those magical checks that floated through space and you hope that they didn't land too soon. So it was.
Yeah, that doesn't work anymore, does it? They
no,
get the bank
doesn't.
Instantly now. Online banking is a great thing, but oh my gosh, if you don't have the funds in there, they're going to know it.
Exactly. And so I couldn't afford to do that. And besides that, I hadn't seen any sales. I hadn't figured out a real business model. So it was the beginning of 2012. And I spent all of the rest of 2011 all right, figuring out how do I connect with people. How do I market? How do I do this? So the beginning of 2012 is when I really started putting some strategy in place and building traffic to my website, start offering other services like coaching and creating a couple guides and different things that way. And I started implementing a strategy, and the books started selling at that point. And it was about...
Now, which book are we talking about again?
Tales of the Everyday Working Man and Woman.
Okay.
It was that book, and then it was a couple of mini guides that I had created. And then I actually ended up with two coaching clients by mid-January. And though that wasn't a lot of money. It was $40 a session, and I would coach each of them once a week, so it was about $80 a week. So I'm not getting rich here by this point. But implementing the strategy, I did start to see some book sales. And Amazon, the way Amazon does is they pay you every 90 days. So first 90 days was nothing from the five books. No. But then the next 90 days, it was actually a pretty decent check. It was somewhere around, I think it was like $800, if I can remember right. So that was a little bit of money. But then as time went on, I could log into Amazon every day and see what the sales were. I see that the books were actually selling. And when I came to May of 2012, I had sold in the neighborhood of 30,000 copies. So, and I attribute that to March of 2012. That's when I really started guest posting on large websites, and I started really getting some traffic. Like, one of them was MichaelHyatt.com, and he was the former chairman of Thomas Nelson. He's got a website that gets about 500,000 visitors a day. So that traffic... really, really helped. And then it was March 9th that my second self-published book came out. And so that between all the guest posts and the second book, the traffic, some of the strategies I was using with social media, the sales started adding up. So about May of 2012, I got the privilege to attend a Brendon Burchard conference. And if you don't know who Brendon Burchard is,
everybody look him up. Yep.
Look him up. And that conference just blew my mind. Like, I mean, the content, the information, it was like I had a migraine. I had so much intake. That was also
two of my clients just came back from his most recent, and I'm telling you, they were driving, and they were on the phone to me going, oh, we've got to do this. I know. I've been telling you that. Why didn't you listen to me? But they listened to him. I don't care how
Absolutely.
They got the information, as long as we can implement it.
Yeah, and I think it was Experts Academy, which I had the privilege to attend also. And it's absolutely amazing, his content. And
yeah,
that was also the conference where I'm sitting there during the networking time at dinner, just talking to a guy, blabbering on about my story and my book and this and that. I'm like, oh, yeah, by the way, I forgot to ask your name. He's like, yeah, hi, I'm Nathan. I'm the publisher at Sound Wisdom. And I was like, hey, Nathan, good to meet you.
And they're your publisher now, aren't they?
They are my publisher now.
Yeah.
And so I got back from Brendan Burchard's, it was called 10X Empire, and I really started implementing a strategy. And it was through the rest of that year of 2012 implementing a strategy where I went from selling a few, you know, I'd done decent, but that's when it really exploded. And more than the books, my coaching business exploded. I started doing some consulting. I started in June, when I got back from that conference, June of 2012 was when I spoke at my first conference. Just, I didn't have the confidence to do it, but I definitely saw Brendan up there and how he was doing it. And I'm like, you know what? I got to do this. And so the conference that emailed me, I had initially turned them down. But after I got back from that conference, I said, you know what? Yeah, I'm gonna do this. And that conference was in Huntington, West Virginia. And so I went there and spoke to them, and it was amazing. And so for the rest of that year, I mean, Denise is my friend on Facebook, so she'll tell you, I felt like I was literally everywhere. Like, I mean, it was every 2 or 3 weeks I was speaking at another conference in some part of the world. Now, the speaking, it's really, when you're speaking internationally, you're not, they're covering your flight, they're covering your, and they're putting a little money in your pocket. When I say a little money in your pocket, it could range anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're getting this big check for you know, $20,000 or anything like that. I'm not quite Bob Berg yet. But
or Larry Winget.
Yeah, there you go.
Dondi Scamacci. I know. Yeah, I know. So, but here's the thing. I want to back up just a little bit, and I don't want to interrupt your flow, so we'll pick back up. But how in the world did you get invited to conferences when you weren't really putting yourself out there as a speaker? Look, I know I work with a lot of authors and speakers, and they would kill for that to happen. Tell us how that happened.
Well, the first one was, it was called the BAM Social Media Conference. And really, they had reached out to me because they saw what I was doing with social media to sell
ebooks. Okay.
And when I started selling, sold a significant amount of ebooks, I don't know, I think it was 60,000 ebooks, some alarms must have been going off at a lot of different places.
Gotcha.
And then I got several offers from publishers unsolicited, and I'm like, you know, how do you even know who I am? And then I got just all kinds of people that were contacting me saying, hey, can you help me with this? Would you be interested in coaching me with that? Like, companies that were saying, hey, would you be interested in, and even like some even job offers. So I don't know where the alarms went off, but they went off somewhere. But that first conference, I initially said no to, and I went back and spoke. But then after that, I got the bug. And so I actively started pursuing conferences myself. So the conference that I spoke at, I would say it's a mix of 80% conferences that I've sought after, and about 20% have asked me to come speak.
And here is something that I think that aspiring authors and writers don't really understand, because their publishing houses, I think, don't necessarily share this information with them, Kamanzi. You basically, in this economy and the way that things work these days, you have to create your own platform. You have to gather up your own fans. You have to basically sell your own book. They may publish it for you. But the days of going on book tours, you know, endless weeks and weeks of book tours, those days are pretty much over. So
yeah,
you have to have a platform. And what I'm hearing from you is that you inadvertently systematized your platform and created a phenomenal platform. And that's what had these publishing houses and groups going, let's pay attention to this guy. He knows what he's doing.
And that's what I find, too, is authors will email me and they'll say, I got this great book. And the first thing I ask them, I'm like, well, how is everything else? How are you on social media? How is your blog? How many email subscribers? Because you hit the nail on the head. That the platform is almost more important than how good the book is.
I agree. Because people have to know you, like you, respect you, want to follow you. You can put out the best darn book ever. But if nobody knows about it, you've just got a really nice bookend. I mean, it's not going to go anywhere.
And my publisher explained to me really well when I first came on. He said, you know, we're going to take your book and we're going to place it in all these places, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, you know, all these bookstores all over the country. But here's the thing. You're a first-time author. How are they going to separate you from all the other first-time authors? And if you're just, you know, some guy from Wisconsin, but you don't really have a platform, you're not in a very good placement in that store at all. They're going to say, well, what's going to draw customers in? Barnes & Noble's going to say, why would you want the book in here? What's going to draw the customers in if you don't already have an audience base?
Right, right. And I think, again, that is what so many people don't understand these days. They don't understand that largely, and I'm not saying 100%, but largely, the onus of creating your audience falls on you, the author, the speaker.
Yep.
And that, you know, that it's just the way it is. And unfortunately, like I said earlier, I don't think that's really adequately explained to anybody. I think they just, oh, I'm going to be published. I'm going to be in Barnes & Noble, and I'm going to be on Amazon Kindle. But I think they don't understand that to get there, to even get to where a publisher will pay attention to you, you already have to have your platform pretty much in place, don't you?
Absolutely. And if anybody takes away anything from our talk today, build your platform.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, practically, if you go into a Barnes & Noble's, and, you know, I'm sure everybody has, look at all the books that are in there. There's, like, thousands of books. You know, and I go in there and I look for my book. I know what it looks like. But if I was a random customer, you know, what would separate my book from all those other books out there? It's crazy.
I know. It is. And, you know, this is going to be a whole nother talk. We're going to have to do this again. To me, the book cover is very important. But you know what's more important to me, Kamanzi? The spine. The spine.
Yeah.
And people don't think about that. They don't think, okay, you've got I'm looking at one of my bookshelves now. They're all lined up. You know, I've got them sorted out. These are business books. These are inspirational. These are motivational. Larry Winget's got his own shelf. I mean, that's just the way it is. Larry Winget and Bob Berg and Mark Sanborn are all on the same shelf up there. But, and you know, and so they're all sorted out. But here's the thing. I want to be able, from across room, I'm at my desk right now, I want to be able to look at my bookcase and pick out by the spine what I'm looking for. So that spine, that's, to me, some very important real estate. If I can't read it, or if I can't see your logo, I'll tell you who has a great spine, Brand Against the Machine, John Michael Morgan. You can't miss that book anywhere on the bookshelf. So, you know, that's important. And I think a lot of people just go, oh, I'm just going to hire somebody to create my cover. Go for it. Make sure that spine is readable from 14 paces or 10 or whatever it is.
And you're talking about the spines, and my publisher was talking about in the local Barnes & Nobles where I'm at, they have the book actually face out. And he's like, how did you do that? I'm like, I didn't do anything. He's like, you know, normally they charge you between $2,000 to $6,000 to do that.
I was going to ask you about that, because all the pictures I've seen, it is facing out, and I thought maybe you went in and did that and then took pictures.
So it's so weird. When the local Barnes & Noble's here, like the first one I ever posted a picture of, the store manager said he saw the book come in and he liked the title. And so he opened the book and saw it's from Milwaukee and he bought the book and started reading it.
There you go. Yeah.
And so then he said he liked it so much, he put it face out. But the other
one.
It's
got a great color, too. It's, you know, it's a very colorful book.
Absolutely. And then the other ones, I actually went in and signed copies of the book. So they threw the little autographed author sticker on there, and they put them with the other autographed author books. So that's kind of why they have those spaced out, too. But, yeah, normally they charge a publisher a lot of money for that.
Yeah, I know. I knew they did, and I was actually going to ask you about that. So when you want to go into Barnes & Noble's or any of the others, do you call them up and say, listen, I'm the author, my book is there, can I come in and autograph some? Or do you just drop in?
You just drop in. Usually, if you're a local person, they love local authors. Like, I can't stress how much they love local authors. And so if you come in and you show them your book and you're like, hey, I'm a local author, but more than that, just say, hey, this is where I'm going to be directing, you know, people that are local to. I'm going to be directing to this, to your local Barnes & Noble. They love hearing that, too. And that's what I did. And so you build that relationship.
And again, relationship, and that's part of the platform that I wanted to talk with you about too. And when people are listening to us in, I know they're saying, platform, what the heck is she talking about? The platform is exactly what you did. You've got to have that social media component in there. You have to have your blog up. You have to be guest blogging. You have to have a list where people can subscribe to your either updates or your newsletter. I prefer updates, but everybody has their own preference. I say you offer both. But here's the thing. When we say platform, we mean that you have to get out there and build your own audience. And what you just said is so, so important about that, building that platform, is that relationship marketing. Critical. So do you mind addressing that a bit?
It's made all the difference to me from what I do, because old school marketing and what I used to do is you tried to build up numbers. I want a big following. Let me build up these numbers, and then I'm going to overwhelm them with, you know, an incredible deal or whatever, and hope that I get a certain percentage to actually click through. But my friend
2%.
Jared,
if you get 2%, you're happy.
Exactly. And my friend Jared, I don't know if he's the first person to say this, but he called it the connection economy, which I like hearing
right.
that.
Right, yeah. Right.
And the relationships that I built online with other bloggers, you saw this. You're my friend on Facebook, so you saw this. I had a blogger that I met online. He's a blogger. Mm-hmm. Then I went to speak at a conference in Michigan, and we had lunch. My book release party was this past weekend. He drove all the way from Michigan and stayed at my home for the book release party. And that's a relationship I built online. So social media was originally designed to kind of mimic life. Now, it can't exactly mimic life, but the more social you are, the more relationships you build, the better off you're going to be and the better off your platform is going to be. So building relationships like with a guy named Dan Miller. He was a guy who 3 years ago, I read his book, 48 Days of Work You Love, and I was absolutely blown away. The book changed my life. And over those 3 years, you know, I connected with him, emailed, shared his content, helped him any way I could, guest posted for him. And now, 3 years later, he's on the cover of my book.
Mm-hmm.
And it started out as just somebody that I knew, and I built that relationship with him over time. And he's a New York Times bestselling author. So, yeah,
right.
The relationships are what's going to separate you from everybody else.
Well, they really are. And here's the thing about Facebook in particular. I find that Facebook is just gold if you use it properly, if you're there for business. And by that, I mean you form these relationships, you chat with people, you get to know people. It's kind of like throwing a rock into a pond. You get that ever-widening concentric circle. I mean, you spoke about Bob Berg earlier. Some of my greatest guests have come as a result of Bob being on my show going, you know who would be a great match for you? Dondi Scamacci, Mark Sanborn. I mean, he just sends me people, interview these people. People I probably wouldn't normally get to meet in the normal, you know, my normal day. But here's the thing. Once you start building these relationships, and I don't say do it deliberately. If you're doing it deliberately, it's not natural.
No.
But what happens is that you pick up an ever-increasing fan stream, and I hate to use that word, but, you know, Facebook pages did used to use the word fan pages, but you do. I mean, you will get, like you said earlier, you don't know where the alarm bell's off. People are watching. They're watching your posts. They're watching how you interact with other people. And they kind of have you in the corner of their eye, and all of a sudden something may come to mind that, let me go look at what that Kamanzi guy's doing. And all of a sudden you may get an offer out of the blue. You have no idea where it came from. But I would suggest to you that it's largely as a result of your marketing, your social media relationship marketing that you do consistently. And you do it with grace and dignity.
Absolutely.
So, you know, trying to hit people up with the big list and saying, bye, pay attention to me now, just does not work anymore. But being consistent, it never did for me. But I always, my spidey sense always went off with that. But I think if you just get it into your head, you being the audience, that you need to be on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, whatever suits your business or combination of, you know, several things, just get out there and do it. It's kind of like having that, you know, oh my God, I don't want to get up and make a speech, but you've got to do it. You know, it's easier to do it on Facebook than it is at a podium, so you have to start somewhere.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, that's we already told you one really good takeaway. There's your second one, working, building those relationships.
Mm-hmm. Now, listen.
Yeah, we've been great.
Well, your social media marketing is excellent. I've always said that. And, you know, our relationship was built on Facebook.
Yep.
And, you know, and I consider you to be a friend of mine. I really do. You know, and that's just kind of the way it works out. So, and I like that. I really do. I live in a little bitty town in the middle of, you know, Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. It's not likely we're going to meet downtown, is it?
No.
So, especially if you're in Africa traveling. I mean, and I wanted to go back to that too, Kamanzi. You travel a good bit now. What is that like? I mean, you get to go all over the world now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Japan, the Philippines, Kenya, Amsterdam, Israel earlier this year. It's a good learning experience because when you go to another country, you really, and you're traveling alone, you really do feel it. Like, you're like, man, I'm alone. Like, people, you know, they speak English, but it's not the same. Or like in the case of the Philippines, it was really like a lot of hand gestures. So it's
really,
the English there I would have thought would have been, and I'm not knocking anybody from the Philippines, so please don't take it that way. But I would have thought the English would have been a little bit better than it was. And so yeah, that was interesting communication at times. So going to those countries, it's an incredible experience. And then actually getting to speak and teach in those countries, it makes it so much better. It's like sometimes I have to pinch myself.
Well, and that leads me to my next question. When you're presenting in these countries, is your audience English speaking? I mean, how does that work out?
Yeah, up to this point, they've all been English speaking. I haven't had to use a translator or anything like that. In Israel, there was only two talks that were in English, and then mine was one of them, and the rest were in Hebrew. So that was, I was sitting in the other sessions, and yeah, I'm trying to pick up words, and it wasn't exactly working.
No. That's kind of like a cat talking to a dog. Say what? Say that again. Yeah,
I
know.
I feel blessed, Denise, to be able to do that. It's a blessing to teach people there. Maybe some things that are, you know, things that we know here.
Mm-hmm.
But just the experience of being there, and then people are so friendly. They're so welcoming. They're so in Israel on Saturday, which is the Sabbath there.
Their Sabbath,
is shut down. Mm-hmm. And one of the family that the woman that was directing the conference, her family invited me to a Shabbat meal in their home, which is a big deal for a Jewish family. And, you know, you can't use electricity and nothing like that. So this was just an incredible experience, being able to share that meal with them and see the ritual and the reading from the Torah. And it was unbelievable.
I would imagine it would be. And how kind of them to invite you.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I would love to experience something like that. Okay, so I have so many questions, and I know I'm skipping around a bit, but my brain is a little bit on fire. Let's talk about the sorry. It's like we didn't get to talk a couple of weeks ago, so I'm making up for it now. Let's go back to the book just a little bit. Tell us the title of the book, and what are the 9 steps?
Yeah, the book is called Are You Living or Existing? It originally was my second self-published book. And when Sound Wisdom picked it up, and we went through the editing process and it came out, I feel like this is such a better book. Like, it almost makes me look smart the way the book is now. I mean, because they really did an excellent job. And even the title, Are You Living or Existing? Like, people look at that title and they're like, you know, they're answering the question, like on Facebook and on people's
right.
pictures. Yeah, it's created some engagement. And so 9 Steps to Change Your Life, and the 9 steps are Number one, it's identifying your dreams, and, you know, that's about figuring out where you want to go in life, and you know, it takes some time, and it took me some time, so don't think that it's going to happen overnight. Step two is getting fit, and in this chapter, you know, I don't talk just about physical exercise. I talk about getting fit mentally, physically, and emotionally, and if you work on getting fit, you'll find that this is going to help your journey so much on later down the line. You're going to develop discipline by starting physical exercise, but then getting fit mentally, emotionally is about getting control of those emotions and feelings that sometimes hold us back from chasing our dreams, because we get depressed or something doesn't work out, and those feelings can just be out of control and hold us back. And then step three is getting rid of the negative. And this is all about any negative habits in your life, anything negative that will hold you back from really making that change in your life. And it could even involve people that you have to cut loose from your life. And mm-hmm. I tell a very personal story of having to cut ties with my best friend since I was 2 years old. But every time I would tell him about the things I wanted to do in my life, he would shoot them down and tell me how stupid they were. And it got to the point where I already had enough doubts and fears, I couldn't keep listening to what he was saying.
Yeah.
And so once you get rid of negative, step four is fixing your money, because we all know that you're going to need money for whatever it is you want to do, whatever change it is you want to make your life. And I just talk about some practical things like budgeting, paying off debt. I mean, there's financial experts that will, you know, that will tell you a lot, but this is just some basic fixing your finances so you're going to be able to set yourself up for just later on. Down the line, so you're in a lot better position. And then step five is nailing down your plans. This is where you start to put together kind of the skeleton plan of whatever big change it is that you're making in your life. Like for our family, we're moving to Hawaii.
I know. You don't like the cold, do you?
No. Well, you know what? Actually, I like the cold. I just don't like the snow. I could go without snow. I mean, I don't mind cold, but, yeah, being able to in 75-degree weather all the time and getting those cool trade winds from the ocean, you know, I don't think I can complain about that kind of life.
No.
So step five is when you start to nail down some of the bigger points to that plan. You know, how are we going to do this? Are we going to take all our stuff when we go to Hawaii? And the answer is no. Are we going to ship any cars? And, you know, just you putting – together kind of some of the main points of the plan, but don't think that you have to have all the details figured out at this point because you're still working it out. And then step six is, once you got some of those main points in place, step six is make the first moves. So this is kind of where you put your toe in the water and you test out some of the theories that you're thinking about. And then once you do that, step seven is tying up the loose ends, and that's when you really start to bring the plan in place. You've already testing the waters, you got a good idea of what's going to work and what's not going to work, and this is where you really start to nail down the plans and put the whole thing together. And then step eight is to make the radical change, whatever it is. This is where you actually do it, and then that leads you to step nine. When you have done all this, step nine is pay it forward. So you've made this change in your life, you're living a new life, then you go back and you help somebody else along the way.
Right. And that last step also leads us right back into social media, the relationship marketing, the relationship building, is that one thing you want to do as an author or a speaker or a virtual assistant or a web developer, whatever it is that you do, you really do want to be a resource for other people. And I think
Absolutely.
That's so important. You're sharing not just your own information. You're not marketing yourself all the time. But you're paying it forward by saying, listen, you know, I may be a virtual assistant, and I am an online business manager, but look, there are some of, and I won't call them my competitors, I call them my colleagues, because we're all working in that same pond, so to speak, and some of them have some great ideas. And I mean, they've got some great programs. I'm going to share them. I have no reason not to share this information that these gals or guys are putting out, because it's really good stuff.
And, you know, for me, Denise, I get people, authors all the time that will, you know, email me and say, you know, you sold 8,000 books. I want to sell books. You know, can you give me any tips? And I'll freely share.
Sure.
I'm not going to hold back at all. And they're like, well, do you want me to pay you for this? And I'm like, no, don't pay me for this. Just take the knowledge, use it, and kill it.
Right, right. And I think that that has its own way of circling back and just kind of making things right for you. Yeah, it's kind of, if you ditch that corporate mindset, when you first go into being an entrepreneur, or you jump off the bridge to become an entrepreneur, whatever, however you do it, you have to give up that business corporate mindset, which means that you can't hug your ideas to your chest in the break room. You have to share. You have to talk. You have to speak with your competitors. Often they will become your colleagues. They may become some of your biggest fans. You can't just sell, sell, sell. You have to actively get out and speak with people in your own field of work, pick their brains, offer to help them out, just whatever feels right. But you can't have that, it's my idea and I'm not sharing it. It just doesn't work in today's environment.
Nope, and you, like you said, you'll be surprised. Once you pay it forward, you'll be surprised at how much it comes back to you tenfold.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's the goal, but it's just naturally that. That's what happens.
It's just a natural law, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what is going to be the hardest step out of these 9 steps? What was the hardest step for you?
I would say it was getting rid of the negative. And it was that friend that I had lost that, you know, I loved so and still love to this day, still love so much, just losing him from my life. And not only him, but there was also a couple of family members that I stopped talking to for a while because, you know, they were screaming and shouting and like, this is crazy and, you know, you're going to be bankrupt and bankrupt your wife and kids. And yeah, it was really hard.
Yeah, but you know, Kamanzi, that's more about them than it is about you.
Absolutely.
You know, sometimes it's good to identify the source of your angst. And if you can tune them out, tune them out. If you can't, cross them off your Christmas card list. Seriously.
Yeah,
and I know that sounds brutal, but you have to do it.
And at some point down the line, you eventually hope to reestablish that connection.
Mm-hmm.
But we already have enough doubts and fears. We already have enough. If you watch the news for about 10 minutes, you already know there's enough negative going on in the world. You don't need to add to that.
That's exactly right. Now, you said something earlier when you were talking about the steps, and I know that you didn't say this, but this is what I heard. Is negative self-chatter. And that's a problem for everybody. I mean, the most confident among us experiences that. Do you have any kind of tips or tricks that you can offer about that?
I would definitely say the biggest thing that would work, that's worked for me and would work probably for you is to have a good support system.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was 3 friends. And those 3 friends, when I had that self-publishing disaster, and throughout some parts of the journey where I fell down, they were there to pick me up. They were there to encourage me, to help me, to let me know, and also to be brutally honest with me and say, you know what, stop being a baby, or, you know, you didn't give this your best effort.
Right. Quit whining.
But, yeah, you need both of those. You don't just need the cheerleaders. You need people that are just going to be real with you, but do it in a way that's not going to, you know, shatter your self-confidence.
Well, it's called constructive criticism for a reason. And sometimes it's hard to step back and go, but. I mean, I will experience this with the websites that I build every now and then. And I'll put together something I think is just stunning. And then the client says, well, this isn't, you know, really kind of what I had in mind. I'm like, what? Whoa, look at it again. It's beautiful. What the heck is wrong with you? And ultimately, I have to stomp around and, you know, bite things and then come back and go, it's their real estate on the web. You know, it's like, okay, I'll make those changes. I'm not happy about it, but I'll make those changes. And you know what? It's their real estate. It's not mine. Most of the time I can, and this happens so rarely that when it does happen, I'm really taken aback. But, you know, what we'll do is say, okay, let's let it sit for a few days and look at it again. And you know what? Almost always they go, oh, yeah, I get it now. Or they have their friends and family go, oh, yeah. But that first shock, I'm like, oh, I don't want you as a client anymore. And I get very, you know, babyish about it.
Well,
it works out, but I don't like it. I don't.
I just think it's important with, like you said, we all struggle. Even when you have success, you're still going to struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have, even if it's just that one person where you can be 100% honest and just tell them exactly what's on your mind, not only will it feel good to unload, but then that person might see something that you don't see, and it just really is going to help you.
Right. And I think it's a very good idea to ask for feedback. But that comes with a warning. Feedback is not always going to be constructive. You know, sometimes it's going to be just mean. Sometimes it's not going to even make sense to you. But other times there's going, and hopefully this is the norm, there's going to be that little nugget that you go, oh, how did I miss that? And you're off and running. So, yeah, ask for feedback, but if it's consistently negative or somebody's just coming at you from a place of anger or fear, I wouldn't listen to those people.
No.
I wouldn't. I absolutely would not.
You don't need that in your life.
No, you don't. You have to really... I'm a firm believer in that you are in control of what comes into your life. I really am. You know, you allow negativity in. You also allow good things in. I prefer a 90-10 mix. Like last month, it was the reverse. But we're done. We're done for the year. It's not going to happen anymore. Air conditioning's fixed. Everything's I'm good to go. But, you know, those things happen. So you just kind of stomp out the fires and keep on going. Just create a plan and just keep going. And what I would like for you to do, if you don't mind, is just tell people just a quick step-by-step. If they want to be an author or a speaker, where should they start? Should they start with a blog? Should they start with – can you give kind of a quick primer on how to do this? Do you mind?
Absolutely, especially as I think author or speaker, you definitely need a blog. You need your home base where you're going to be creating content. Because even as a speaker, you can if you want to just do video, you can do a video blog. But if you're a speaker, you got to be able to put yourself out there and have people see you. So you start a video blog, get some great content out there. People are seeing it, they're sharing it. Event planners will come and we'll see that. And as a writer, I mean, that should be a no-brainer. A blog, yeah, definitely. Even as a fiction writer, put your content out there. So start there. Then step two is really social media. Start integrating social media and building up, making connections, building up friends and fans and all that good stuff. And the tip I would say here is decide where you're going to be active and where you're going to be present, because you don't have 5 hours to be on social media all day long. So decide, you know, what's going to be your thing. For me, it's Twitter. I love Twitter. So, like, if you want to really find me, you'll find me on Twitter a lot, you know, throughout the
Really?
World. But I'm still, yeah.
See,
I'm
I didn't
still
know that.
Active.
And I'm on Facebook more, and I don't pay much attention to Twitter. I'm going to have to look for you over there. I mean, I know you're there, but I really don't. I do. But when I look for you, I go to Facebook.
And I'm active on Facebook.
Right.
And, you know, those are the two main ones for me, but, like, you know, I'm still on Google Plus, but I'm not as active. Mm-hmm. I'm still on LinkedIn. I'm not as active. And I'm getting a lot more active on YouTube. So decide where it's going to be, like, your quote-unquote home base on social media. Spend some time there. Still put some content on the other ones just so people know you're alive and they can still follow you in the place of their choosing.
Mm-hmm.
So work on the social media, because it's the best, freest way to make connections and to market and to put yourself out there for the world. And so then really it's about building traffic to your website. You can do that through social media, one, but you can also be different things like guest posting. You can work on your SEO, which is more of a long-term tactic. You can contribute articles all over the place on the internet, and those will all bring links back to your site.
Right.
So it's about building your following. And once you build your following, you got the social media going, you know, then you start releasing products that are for sale. You know, it could be a small guide. It could be a self-published ebook. It could be a course, an online course, whatever it is. Start releasing those to the world. And as you're building that following, you're going to find that more people are going to just naturally, they're going to be interested in your stuff. So they're going to buy from you.
Mm-hmm.
And if
Absolutely.
You ever wanted to go the traditional published route as an author, they're going to look at your platform, the social media in general, the blog, and also your email list. So that's one thing we haven't even touched on, but your email list.
They're going to look at your stats. They're going to look at your opens. They're going to look at your website visitors. You have to have that platform up and running and successfully up and running before you approach a publisher.
And I think a lot of people want to, I don't want to say bypass, but they do want to bypass the whole process of doing the hard work. Because I know like a lot of authors that don't blog and don't want to work on a platform, but then they want to go and try to get an agent to pick up their manuscript or a publisher. And it just, in this day and age when it costs so much for publishers to produce these books, they got to know that it's worth it.
And it takes years. I mean, these things don't come out in a hurry either. I mean, Bob Burke's got a book right now in the works. It's been, I think it's a year and a half. It's still not published. And I think his published date is in August. I'll have to ask him. But, I mean, that book's been with the publisher for quite a while now. And I do want to go back, Kamanzi. I want to skip back just a bit. You said that this book is actually kind of a repurposing of an original book that you did that was an e-book. Was that book in Kindle? Describe that book to me.
Yeah, the book was called The Difference Between Living and Existing, A 9-Month Plan to Change Your Life.
Okay.
And so it originally was a self-published book through Amazon. And,
through Kindle.
It had done through Kindle.
Yeah, okay.
And it had done incredibly well. So.
Okay, so here's my question. What happens when you want, do you have to pull that book? Do you have to completely take that book off of Amazon? I mean, if you want to take that book, which is now in Amazon Kindle, and put it into a book, a real physical book, what has to happen there? What are the steps?
Yeah, you do have to remove the book. You have to stop selling it.
And, that's what I thought.
And that can be hard because, you know, you're making money on that. And when I turned in the manuscript, it was like 8 months. Like you said, it was 8 months before the book came out, hit the bookstores, and they started. So that's
I mean, that's pretty fast, actually.
Yeah. And that is very fast because, yeah, normally it's, like you said, a year and a half.
A couple of years.
Ooh. And if you're already making money on something like that, it hurts a little bit more. But that's where the other parts of your platform, and we can't stress that enough, that's where that comes in, having... Dan Miller told me a long time ago, he said, you can't depend on one book, you can't depend on just your speaking, you can't depend on this or that. He's like, it all has to go together. You have to have seven different things feeding into the circle.
Right, like your products or your consulting practice. So you have to have a lot of things going on while you're waiting for this book to, number one, come off of Kindle, and number two, actually make it through the publishing house into the bookshelves, and then you don't even know that it's going to sell. So
no.
It can be a very scary proposition, I would think. I mean, I'm in the middle of writing a book, and I'm going to be hopefully talking with Sound Wisdom, too. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, we shall see.
And even as you get a published book, like you said, it doesn't guarantee anything.
No.
It doesn't guarantee you could be a New York Times bestseller, but I think that's where it comes to your goals and your expectations. Don't expect to be a New York Times bestselling author. Have some goals. Like, this is my goal. And I talked about that with Sound of Wisdom and Dave, who you know. We talked about what are my goals for when this book comes out, and I set some specific goals. And kind of one of the goals that I set was, from having a published book come out, I want it to help my other parts of my platform. So, like, the first week this book launched, and I had a launch team that helped me launch the book, and it got a lot of exposure, and the book did well. But more than that, I had 632 new email subscribers. I had two new coaching clients that I picked up. I had sold a bunch of the other things that I offer on my website. And so, you know, the book sales, it seemed like it had done well. But more than that, the other parts of the platform really did well.
Come on, I mean, I'm listening to my... I know you mailed me a book, and I can't wait to get it. It seems to me, from what I do know about the book, and I think you had sent me a pre-release copy, so I did read that. Here's what I'm going to put this out on the radio. Why don't you build a program around that book? It seems to me perfectly suited for a 9-month program.
You're revealing trade secrets now. What are you doing?
Okay, we're going. Never mind.
No, the ultimate goal for me is, and that is, you know, because up to this point, the conferences I've spoken at and all this and that, I've talked about social media, I've talked about self-publishing, mm-hmm. this and that. The goal going forward is to more focus on the message of the book, the 9 steps, Are You Living or Existing? And the mm-hmm. first thing I'm doing here in 4 months, which you're going to get an exclusive on this, is I'm going to have the online Are You Living or Existing conference, and we're going to start it off online, and then I eventually want to have like a physical Are You Living or Existing conference.
So, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I thought, surely he is not missing that step. He can't be. So,
no.
Good. And see, I did not know this. I didn't mean to give away your secret. I'm sorry.
No, it's this is more of where I want to focus. So, mm-hmm. yeah, when it comes to social media and helping people build their platforms, I'm out there here helping you for free. So if you ever want to know anything about any of that, hit me up, email me. Kamanzi@talesofwork.com, or you can go to livingorexistingbook.com and just, you know, ask me a question. I'd be more than happy to help you in any part of your process of building your platform.
That's an amazing offer, and thank you. Listen, tell people very quickly again where they can find you. We've got about 4 minutes, and I'm not through asking questions. But before we get... Sometimes we'll get to the very end, and I'm like, oh, I didn't tell him where to find you.
Yeah, I could tell you my name, but I'm not going to. I got some wise advice from a friend of mine, so go to livingorexistingbook.com, and you'll be redirected to my website, and you'll see the book. And from now till May 19th, I'm offering over $100 in free goodies that will help you on your journey if you purchase the book. So you can get all the details at livingorexistingbook.com. So
nice.
Check it out if you're curious.
Yeah, I'll share that today on my social media. What are the next steps for you? What do you think is going to be happening with you, say, from now through the end of the year?
I definitely want to get the online conference going. I'll continue to speak, but more than anything, it's going to be more of a transition into the message of not existing and truly living. So, yeah, I want to transition away from social media, self-publishing, all that. I'll still talk about that, but really I want to get into the meat of this book, and I want to help as many people as I can really realize that they can do this. You know, I'm a bread guy from Wisconsin. I did it, and I want you to see that you can do it too, and I want to help you any way I can, you to figure out how to do this. And so write, speak, create content, just be everywhere. I want you to see me everywhere.
We will. Kamanzi, what is the difference? And I should have asked you this at the top of the show. What is the difference between living and existing? Some people may not kind of make that distinction. How do you identify it?
Well, it starts with, number one, just realizing that life is very short and we're not guaranteed a tomorrow. So it's really about an attitude change about what you do and how you do it. So the way I describe it is it's the attitude towards what you do, which affects how you do it and how you feel about your life. That's the technical definition I gave. But for example, instead of looking at everything as a chore or a burden, look at it as a blessing that you get to do this, that you get to be alive, that you get to even have these incredible things in your life, whereas other people that I've seen now in other parts of the world would die to have what we would have here. So, but just look at things from a different perspective, from blessing. Instead of maybe staying in the house and watching all your favorite primetime shows, why don't you get out there and experience the world and experience life and try a new different experience that you would have never tried. You know, they say variety is the spice of life. So mm-hmm. truly living is just, it's about not holding back. It's about not passing up any opportunities you can to enrich your life in any way. It's just about completely changing your mindset.
And that's not difficult to do, is it, once you become aware that, you know, you may be existing in a bit of a rut, that nothing is really new or exciting or even joyful. I think once you become aware and you start making decisions, different decisions on simply how to think, that expands your life, I believe.
Absolutely. Just realize that you are the one that has the power to change all of that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I tell this to anybody who will listen. Nobody thinks your thoughts but you. Get a hold of them. Take control. I mean, you know, you may have a day where you want to stomp around and bite cats. You know, don't bite the cat. Stomp. It's you know, the cat will bite you back. but you know, sometimes you just have to kind of give in to that, and a half an hour later you're laughing at yourself because you look so silly. Go for it. But then, you know, go outside and smell the Confederate jasmine. Take a deep breath. Really enjoy the moment. And once you start finding those little pockets of, oh, whoa, this is just fabulous, I think you'll find that more and more of those pockets appear. And it's not that they weren't there, it's just that you weren't paying attention to them.
That's so well said, absolutely.
Yeah, it's important. It's important to get up every day, live your life, and go to bed and go, that was a good day. Even if it was a crummy day, that was still a darn good day.
And that's one less day that you have, you know. So if you spend that being miserable, before you know it, you're going to look up and your whole life will have been miserable because it's probably gone.
Yeah, it's over. Kimanzi, we are out of time. This hour went so fast, and I know. You've got to come back. As soon as you're ready to launch your new program, I mean, you've got to come back. Promise me you will.
I promise.
Okay, good. Well, listen, thank you, everybody, for being here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. You can find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Kimanzi Constable, Kimanzi Constable. We're wishing you a wonderful weekend. And, well, no, it's not the weekend. Friday's the weekend. My show is normally Friday. Anyway, we're wishing you a wonderful rest of the week. See what it did to me? It messed up my whole schedule. But I'm so glad you came back. And I will see everybody next week. Kimanzi, thank you.
Thank you for having me, Denise.
Anytime.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeonthewebcom or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.